Well, Ukraine has been independent for three decades. However, if Russia persists with its massive military build-up encircling Ukraine, that sovereignty could end within months. According to UK intelligence, Moscow has hatched a plot to replace Ukraine's government with a friendly regime. Meanwhile, Washington and NATO have told the Kremlin they will not conform to its security demands on Eastern Europe, nor compromise on Ukrainian sovereignty. So, what does Vladimir Putin want? And is it possible to avoid making this crisis worse? For answers, let's turn to our panel. Catherine Stoner is Director of the Center on Democracy, Development and the Rule of Law at Stanford University in California. She's author of Russia Resurrected, Its Power and Purpose in a New Global Order. That's published by Oxford University Press. Hi there, Catherine.
Hi there.
And John Mearsheimer is Professor of Political Science at the University of Chicago. He's author of, most recently, The Great Delusion, Liberal Dreams and International Realities. That's published by Yale University Press. John, welcome back to RN.
Glad to be here, Tom.
John Mearsheimer, let's start with you. Simple question. What does Putin want?
Well, I think the conventional wisdom in the West is that what he wants to do is create a greater Russia. He sort of wants to bring the former Soviet Union back from the dead, and he is a very aggressive character. I think this argument is untrue, and I think the present crisis is all about Ukraine and making sure that Ukraine does not become a Western bulwark on Russia's border. And more specifically, he and his lieutenants want to make sure that Ukraine does not now or ever become a part of NATO. As Sergei Lavrov, the foreign minister, said recently, they must understand that the key to everything is the guarantee that NATO will not expand eastward. So this is all about Ukrainian membership in NATO.
Well, a rule of diplomacy is to try to put yourself in your opponent's shoes and look at the world from their perspective. Catherine Stoner, bearing that in mind and following on from John Mearsheimer, does Russia have legitimate security interests in its near abroad, which explains why Putin will play hardball to protect those interests?
To some degree, yes, of course. I mean, all countries have interests, but there are lots of different ways of pursuing those interests, and this is not the most obvious way for any Russian leader. So there is something specific about Putin pursuing this with militarily. I would agree with John, by the way, in terms of what Putin wants. It's not to bring the Soviet Union back. A lot of people invoke the quote from Putin where he says something like the collapse of the Soviet Union was the greatest catastrophe of the 20th century. But they forget the second part of that sentence, which is anybody who doesn't feel that has no heart, but anyone, a former Soviet citizen who wants the Soviet Union back, has no head. And so I would agree that's not what he's after. It's kind of influence without ownership of some of the post-Soviet states. It is about Ukraine in particular, but it's not necessarily NATO. I think that is completely manufactured. There was no immediate threat of Ukraine joining NATO earlier this year when this buildup began, and there's no threat of Ukraine joining NATO now. That's completely manufactured. I think your question was, what does Putin want? What doesn't he want? He doesn't want a democratized Ukraine that is a member of Greater Europe or the European Union. He doesn't want Ukraine, in other words, to look like, what was East Germany or, Poland 10 years ago. That's a step too far. And, as I wrote in the Wall Street Journal recently, I think there are domestic causes of that as well. So there are legitimate security concerns that any country has, but Putin has actually made Russia's situation worse vis-a-vis NATO and Ukraine since 2014. If that's the concern, he's not pursuing those interests.
Yes, but the Western conventional wisdom believes that Ukraine has every right to join NATO if it so desires, and that it makes sense to arm and train Ukrainian military forces. But John Mearsheimer, you say the great powers like Russia have what's called spheres of influence, and they'll play hardball to protect those interests. Let's get your reaction to the EU ambassador to Australia. This is Michael Pulsch on RN Breakfast this week.
the Russian concept of sphere of influence is not a concept for the 21st century. It harks back to dark periods of European history when small countries were at the mercy of aggressive neighbours.
That's the EU ambassador to Australia, Michael Pulsch. John Mearsheimer.
Well, I think that Michael Pulsch and many people in the West believe that. They think that realpolitik is dead, and anybody who advocates or says they believe in spheres of influence is a dinosaur. But the problem is that Vladimir Putin disagrees with Mr. Pulsch, and Vladimir Putin is of great importance in the equation. And what has happened here is that the West Europeans, and especially the Americans, have pushed the EU and they have pushed NATO eastward, thinking that spheres of influence don't matter anymore and that Russia is not going to be upset by the movement of the EU and NATO eastward. But in fact, because Putin doesn't accept the basic logic that Mr. Pulsch and his friends deploy, we have a major crisis on our hands. So really, it's not Putin who is responsible for this crisis. It's Mr. Pulsch and his friends in the European Union and his friends in Washington who have a theory of international politics or a view of international politics that's out of sync with Putin's view. And in fact, Putin's view is the governing view in this particular case.
And some listeners tuning in might say, what's good for the goose is surely good for the gander. Catherine Stoner, would the US ever tolerate a great power forming a military alliance with another country in its Western Hemisphere, much less on its border?
I just fundamentally disagree with much of what John is saying. This is a crisis, quote unquote, completely manufactured in terms of timing by Putin, as was 2014. In 2014, and I actually take this on pretty directly in my book, there was no threat of Ukraine joining NATO. No one was talking in 2014 when they grabbed Crimea and stirred up this presence in Donbass of Ukraine joining NATO. And where exactly is the offer for Ukraine to join NATO right now? There isn't one. So this isn't about NATO, and it isn't a crisis provoked by NATO expansion. The last country, I think, maybe to join NATO a few years ago was North Macedonia. Well, that's, you know, hardly huge expansion. And again, it's not on offer right now to Ukraine. And President Biden has explicitly said that. So whether you believe in spheres of influence or not, I mean, that's a fact. It is not on offer right now.
Isn't Putin the aggressor here,
yes,
John Mearsheimer? Because
yeah.
Russia, under his leadership, following on from Catherine Stoner's point, it has used military force in Georgia, 2008, Crimea, eastern Ukraine in 2014 and onwards, Syria, 2015. So how would you, John Mearsheimer, respond to the widespread view that, you know, the Russian bear here is on the prowl and that even failure to stop Russian expansionism could amount to appeasement a la the 1930s? John Mearsheimer.
This all goes back to the NATO decision in April of 2008 at the Bucharest summit, where NATO said when the summit meeting was over with that Georgia and Ukraine would become part of NATO. The Russians made it categorically clear at that point in time that Georgia and Ukraine are not going to become part of NATO. This is a bridge too far. They drew a line in the sand. It's no accident that in August 2008, you had a war between Georgia and Russia. And it is no accident that in February 2014, a crisis and eventually a war broke out over Ukraine. Those are the two countries that NATO said would become members in 2008. And the Russians said, that is not going to happen. So what is going on here is that NATO, which was moving eastward since the middle of the 1990s, went too far. and the Russians are acting in a defensive way. What happened with regard to Georgia and what happened with regard to Ukraine is defensive in nature. The reason that they took Crimea is because Sevastopol is a major naval base on the Crimean principle, and they lived in fear that in the future, Ukraine would become part of NATO, and that naval base, Sevastopol, would become a NATO naval base.
So in other words, Putin, far from being the aggressor, is reacting to events. He's defensive. Catherine Stoner.
Yeah, so again, I mean, that is the Kremlin line that John just repeated beautifully. And it is fundamentally, factually incorrect, right? So where was the threat in 2014 of NATO expansion? Well, there wasn't one, right? NATO had not expanded for a full 5 years before the invasion and the grabbing of the Crimean Peninsula. What happened, and these, again, these are facts, right? And the timing matters. What happened to topple the corrupt Putin-esque leader of Ukraine in 2014 was that the Ukrainian people came out on the streets to protest against his decision not to sign an accession agreement to the European Union. That is not NATO, right? So you're basically drinking the Kool-Aid that Vladimir Putin is serving by saying, oh, and we quickly had to grab Crimea because these crazy fascists in Ukraine were going to take away our access to the Black Sea Fleet. That was just simply not true. If you also know the details, you'll know that they needed the money from the lease agreements, the new Ukrainian government. So that was never, ever
in doubt. Now, well, John Mearsheimer, following on from Catherine, I mean, NATO is not offering membership to Ukraine and has not come close to doing so since 2008. So does she have a point that Moscow is being overly sensitive here? John Mearsheimer.
No. Where I disagree with Catherine is what the Russians are concerned with is that Ukraine not become a Western bulwark on their border. And the centerpiece of their concern is that Ukraine becomes a part of NATO. The fact is that to make Ukraine a bulwark of Western influence, there were three policies that the West pursued. One is EU expansion. Two is NATO expansion, and three is the color revolutions. So what happened in February of 2014 did not have much to do with NATO expansion. I agree with Catherine on that. It had to do with the Orange Revolution. It had to do with the whole subject of the coup against Yanukovych, and it had to do with EU expansion. But EU expansion and democratization or the color revolution are inextricably bound up with NATO expansion. So these three things all go together. And with regard to what's happening today is that Ukraine is becoming a de facto member of NATO. This is what has spooked the Russians and has caused the recent crisis. It's the fact that we're giving arms of all sorts to the Ukrainians. We're showing all sorts of evidence that we support the Ukrainians.
My guests are John Mearsheimer, author of The Tragedy of Great Power Politics, and Catherine Stoner, author of Russia Resurrected, Its Power and Purpose in a New Global Order. Let's move on to what next here. Now, Catherine, to what extent is Western disunity a problem here, especially given that several European states, I'm thinking of Germany and Italy in particular, they're very dependent on Russian fossil fuels, which means that Putin has energy leverage over the continent. And we should bear in mind that the price of natural gas for most Europeans to heat their homes, it's risen by more than 400% in 2021 as they shut down their gas production and failed to ramp up renewables to take their place. So, I mean, Europe is so dependent on Russian gas. Doesn't that hurt a united Western effort to bring Putin into line? Catherine Stoner.
Couple of issues. One is the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which is pretty much built. That's between Russia and Germany to supply natural gas. It runs along Nord Stream 1 from St. Petersburg, roughly, to northern Germany under the Baltic Sea. So it requires certification that would bring a lot of Russian natural gas online. And Germany is dependent, as you said, in particular on Russian natural gas because its anti-nuclear power policy and alternative fuels haven't quite come online. So that's the issue. There's consensus in that group of folks who've worked on these issues for a long time that if, you know, there's often a ratchet effect. So if it was Russia were to fully invade and attempt to occupy Ukraine and encircle Kiev or Kyiv, as the Ukrainians say, then yes, Germany would be stopping any kind of certification of the Nord Stream project. However, if it's something less than that, and I think that is actually more likely in terms of U.S. what might happen next, if it is, for example, occupying, sending in more troops into the Donbass region and perhaps creating a land bridge through southeastern Ukraine to Mariupol to Crimea, because there's a water problem in Crimea. The Ukrainians have cut water supplies to the extent they can off to Crimea. Well, that might be a different matter. Okay. So in that the Germans might react less strongly. And so that's the problem. And I think President Biden hinted at that last week.
Where are we heading now, John Mearsheimer? I mean, the US is inclined to make virtually no meaningful concessions to Russia's demands. And you've argued that it refuses to believe that Russia has legitimate security concerns over Ukraine. So the question here is, does this story have a happy ending?
No, this story doesn't have a happy ending. I think at best we'll get more of the same and possibly things will get worse. The Russians have drawn a line in the sand here. Ukraine cannot become a part of NATO, and they want the United States to also do all sorts of other things that the United States is not going to do. I mean, the problem here is that Joe Biden is in such bad political shape that there's no way he can make any concessions to the Russians. The Russians are not going to make any concessions. So this battle is going to go back and forth. And the great problem that we face is that Ukraine matters more to them, to the Russians, than it does to us. And furthermore, Ukraine is right next door to Russia, so the Russians are in a much better position to affect events in Ukraine than we do. So the situation is going to deteriorate for us. And by the way, that's a disaster because we should be focusing on China, not focusing on Russia.
Now, Catherine Stoner, that action-reaction cycle that John Mearsheimer mentions, I mean, is that where we're headed?
I think that's right. I mean, that's something we definitely agree on. As I said in the Wall Street Journal piece I wrote last week, that is, Mr. Putin knows that those are non-starters. It's not up to us, the United States, to tell NATO whether Ukraine will be in or out. And no one was talking about that or has talked about that in at least 6 years. That's a non-starter. So it does look like Russia in particular doesn't want to negotiate meaningfully here. And so, the prediction, I think, is that something will happen, probably after the Olympics, so he doesn't offend Mr. Xi. But I do think the American administration has made a mistake in having announced before that what they wanted was American foreign policy to focus exclusively on China and Mr. Putin just be stable and predictable. Well, who in his situation would do that? It's almost an invitation to be unpredictable.
Catherine Stoner, John Mearsheimer, a lively exchange. Thanks so much for being on ABC Radio.
Thanks very much, Tom, for having me. It was a pleasure.
My pleasure, Tom.
That was Professor Catherine Stoner from Stanford University in California and Professor John Mearsheimer from the University of Chicago.